next year. Meeting's called to order. Please all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, we do have a quorum. Director Rice will not be with us. She's having health issues still and cannot make it to the meeting. And I see that on a nice day like today, most people took advantage. Report from closed session, Mr. Carmel. Anything to report?
Not a whole lot. The board primarily discussed how best to proceed with the general manager recruitment.
All right. Thank you. Agenda review. Any additions or deletions anyone wants to make to the agenda? No? All right. Thank you. Public comment. I have one slip here from Teresa Drummond. You ready? Okay. You're up.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to report about the, I guess it's called ITS now, in the solution. The group has met and we're continuing to meet. Our next meeting is going to be on May 8th at 10 a.m. at the Pacific Premier Bank. We're discussing the homeless issues that we have around here. And I got some more information this morning from Pastor Brent over at the Presbyterian Church, who said that they had like 25 or 30 people in their group. And he broke down the homeless people into four categories. And the first group is people that are living here year-round. He said that there are about 10 or 12 of them. And then there's the transient community. They're homeless, seasonal travelers, environmental. And he talked about those are the ones that are causing the environmental impacts and trash and all that kind of stuff. And that about a couple of times a year, the sheriff comes through and does what they call sweeps. And then there are the, quote, hidden homeless. They're mostly immigrants, and they have like 16 to 20 people living in two- or three-bedroom homes. And then there are the fourth group is the hovering homeless, which are people that are living by themselves. They don't have any family. They've outlived their friends, and they're just one payment away from being homeless. They don't have a whole lot of money, and usually the law enforcement is called to address these issues with these people in the form of calling 911 because they need help of some sort, or they've fallen, or whatever it is that's going on. I did go to the North County Advisory Council meeting, and we are getting a lot of support from Supervisor Gibson, and they said to call them if we needed anything at all from them. And I really appreciate the cooperation that we've had with the CCSD, the encouragement, and that kind of thing. But one of the things is we didn't want to recreate the wheel. And so that's why I reached out to the Presbyterian minister, Pastor Brent. And we're just moving forward with this. And we have a lot of really, really, really good people, including Cynthia Snell, who is an environmental biologist. So she really understands the environmental impact on our water here. Thank you very much.
Okay. Did they have a number on these hovering homeless?
No, they're unidentified.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Director Stidell.
Ms. Desmond, I was wondering, the numbers that you got from the pastor, did he indicate how he was able to define those numbers? Did they speak to people, or was it input from others? Or
They went out and talked to certain people. Like, he knew I call him the cat man, the guy that has the big Baxter, the cat man.
Yeah.
And he's one of the permanent homeless that are in town. So, any other questions?
Thank you.
Appreciate the update. Thank you.
I want to make a brief comment on Baxter, the fellow with the cat. I've often seen Baxter down in Morro Bay. He just kind of commutes back and forth, or he feels comfortable in being at that moment in time. But he's a pretty resourceful fellow, for better or worse.
I have one more thing.
Yes, ma'am.
There was someone when they formed this group of ministers and community people. They said that they have about once a year, in as close as Morro Bay, they have a homeless services, and they call it a MASH event. And it's where they provide services. They provide social services, mental health. They have people there that are there to help them with IDs and to help the veterans and that kind of thing. And it's not really going over, it hasn't gone over very well. They've only gotten like about 10 or 12 people, because some of the homeless people, they like being homeless, you know, and they want us to just leave them alone. So, anyway.
Okay. Thank you again. All right. On to regular business. 13A, discussion of the Finance Committee. Mr. Ogren, you want to introduce this one?
Yeah, President Pearson, Sir William is here today to help with this particular item.
Welcome, Chief Hollingsworth.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. At some point, I'll tell everybody why he's calling me Sir William, but that's a different story. But it's out of my own silliness, I guess. Thank you for letting me be here today and discuss this with you. I believe the staff report is very self-explanatory in regards to what we're requesting, but if you'd like, I could do a very short synopsis of what it is and where we got here, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So, secondary to our existing strategic plan and direction from the Board of Directors and from our Fire Ad Hoc Committee, we have been pushing towards increasing our staffing level, not only for the benefit and safety of the department, but for the community as well. And there are inherently financial issues with that in regards to encumbering those costs. In 2015, we applied for and were awarded a SAFER grant and had extra firefighters on duty. We went through the extensive process of a ballot measure to try and encumber those costs as well, which, although was received the majority of the vote, didn't hit the magic two-thirds mark. And then we applied for another SAFER grant, and obviously the need is very clearly delineated and explained because we were awarded that as well. And because of the fact that we were looking at unsure avenues for funding, it was decided to decline that SAFER grant. So we're back to our original staffing level of two. There's three people on duty every day. Two of those are full-time, and one of those is reserve. And what we're trying to do is get back to that four level with, it would be three full-time people on duty and one reserve. And what we're requesting at this point is a possible direction to the Finance Committee to research and secure another avenue of funding, whatever that may be. Really think outside the box, figure out how we could get to where we need to go, and then couple that with a third application for a SAFER grant. Now, the benefit to that is that's going to come around again this fall. And if we're able to apply for and be successful with another SAFER grant, in concert with being able to secure another avenue of funding, we will have a period of 3 years that we're awarded with the SAFER grant where we can be accumulating funding to basically fill something, pot, if you will, or another account that will help always maintain that balance at a positive in the black, if you will. So there's no way we would ever underfund that. So we would like to be able to do that in concert. But really, this is going to come down to additional direction from you, possibly indicating that the finance committee would be an excellent place for them to discuss and figure out how we could proceed. And there are some numbers and stuff included in here. It is the most current set of numbers that were developed through the finance in cooperation with the finance department. We would want to absolutely look at those very closely and make sure they're right where we need to be, and they're absolutely funded on the high end, so we would never be behind on this process. But I think, in short, that's about where we are, and I'm over to you for questions or any discussion.
Anyone? I have a question for the chief at this point. Yes, ma'am.
So when you say that research and secure an avenue for funding, I don't know that the finance department is the avenue for that process, the securing of the funding or grants. Or I can envision the idea of potentially an ad hoc committee from finance mm-hmm. working with staff and with the fire department. But I don't know that this is a resident responsibility of the finance committee.
Well, I think, in my view, the issue we have before us is basically that we have some outstanding expenses, let's say, that most communities don't. And the big one that faces us is the ranch. And the maintenance that we do on the ranch, which is fine, but that is, I think, kind of taking some of the money that could be spent on the fire department. So I'm not saying that we should take any money away from the ranch at all. Don't get me wrong there. But maybe there's other avenues of grants that we should be looking at for the ranch as well as for the fire department. And the other opportunity that came up in a discussion I had with a couple of the community members was a foundation, okay? And we could have a foundation for the fire department where we raise funds, put it into this foundation, and that foundation gets enough funds so that they could help fund the extra support. Or the other one would be a foundation for the maintenance of the ranch, okay, outside of FFRP. That would actually be a separate foundation that was just for the maintenance and upkeep of the ranch and that kind of thing. So that's two things that have come to my mind, at least, or come to my attention, mm-hmm. that are possibilities for moving this forward. So
I agree. It's and the idea of doing the brainstorming, especially crossing resources, I think is really important, and that's how you generate those kind of ideas. I guess what I'm trying to understand here is the wording that seems to indicate then now the finance committee is responsible for going out and securing these. And that's what I, because it says securing funding resources, and so that's the question that I'm bringing to the process, because I do think that there are a lot of great ideas for generating support for the ranch and providing those appropriate funds to the fire department.
Good. Director Howell.
So the reservation Director Steidel is having is the wording of securing. I didn't even think about that until it was brought up. My kind of understanding was that what was being asked is that some sources of funds be identified. That would be the first step. And it does seem, if I may say, that that does seem to be something the Finance Committee, who has many very talented people on it, it would be useful. Once those sources are identified and evaluated, then the issue of writing the grant is a whole different problem, and that's probably where staff gets involved, I would imagine.
Well, and it isn't necessarily just a grant. I mean, if we're talking foundations, that's a whole nother story. But it's as I said, I think that the best or the most fruitful part of it would be to have someone or an ad hoc committee within finance coordinating with staff as well as coordinating with the chief and his department to do some brainstorming and to lay some things out. And then depending on what those things are, it may be incumbent upon the chief and his staff as far as grants or the staff of the CCSD for pursuing what kinds of ways those could be implemented.
Okay.
Right. Director so source of funding broadly defined, grants, foundations, some source of funding,
there's the taxes that we tried. That's another source of income.
And, yeah. Yep. So I think it's suitable to direct the Finance Committee to address the issue of finding sources of funding that might help.
Certainly don't have any problem taking a lead to coordinate the affected parties to do something that, as long as we can find a way to eliminate the language that says securing.
Okay, we can do that. There's nothing here that we have to do. We're just directing or asking the Standing Finance Committee to go ahead and look into what possible funding sources there are to enable this. And that's about it.
The only other thing that I would request is if in a timing function, if this is something that we could defer slightly, maybe to the first quarter of 1920, just because right now we have so many issues that we're dealing, not so much issues, but we have so much workload in terms of working towards the review and delivery of the 1920 budget. I if you're comfortable with it and the others who would be participating are, you know, putting it off to the first quarter, I think is...
Yeah, so basically, Chief, when is the FEMA grant likely to come out that
it
we would have to make a decision?
It normally comes out at the end of this year, okay. And then would have to be applied for in the very early stages of 2020. So if there was any expediency on my part to stress, it would be to make sure that if the Finance Committee was willing to take that on, that we could have those our proverbial ducks in a row by that time. And I can get you the dates so we knew what we were doing. I'm guessing it's probably going to be more at the fourth quarter of the calendar year of 2019 that we would have to have something, some idea of how to proceed rather than waiting till next year. But I could get you the hard dates, if you will, and that might dictate moving backwards where that discussion would have to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think Director Steidel is talking about July, August getting going on it. So.
Right.
I think that would be appropriate to do that. Yeah.
And President Pearson, if I might add just a quick comment. So Director Steidel and I were in a meeting this morning in order to talk about some of our priorities in budget preparation and also with respect to the grant opportunities. What we're going to do during the budget process is to work on identifying what the dollar estimate is of our unmet needs. And so we're not going to defer thinking about this until the first quarter of next fiscal year. We're actually going to, you know, start identifying how do we estimate our unmet needs, both in terms of the fire department as well as open space maintenance, so that we move into next year, we've got that, you know, our arms pretty well around that, and then start looking at grant opportunities. And then we'll work with Director Steidel as the chair of the Finance Committee of identifying what's the appropriate roles of the actual committee members in comparison to staff.
Okay, very good. Anyone else? Vice President Farmer.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that a number of the suggestions that have been made are already running through my head. So I just want to acknowledge that I think there's some people out in the community that are a little disappointed with regard to the direction that the district is going in some areas. So I just want to give props to the fact that we have, you know, a very talented group of people in the Finance Committee. The chief has been pursuing grant funding, and, of course, the Finance Department is doing the same as well. And so, you know, much greater efforts are being made in this and other areas with regard to finances than have been happening in the past, and the district is doing the best they can, at the, certainly with regard to this issue right here.
Agreed. All right. So... the Finance Committee is so directed, and we'll move on. Correct? Good. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. And if I may, I believe just to piggyback on what Director Steidel was concerned, the absolute intent is exactly what you were expressing. It wasn't to dump that load on or responsibility on the group to say you have to do it. It was really meant in the intent of please offer some guidance on how we can move forward and be successful.
And I appreciate it. It wasn't taken that way. It was just I wanted to understand everybody understood the same ground rules.
I think it's good that we're all on the same page. So,
okay.
Thank
great.
You.
Thank you, Chief.
All right, thank you. Item 13B, someone want to introduce that, and then I do have a public comment on 13B.
Certainly, President Pearson, members of the board, Pavel Ogren, our interim general manager. I'm going to speak. I think that AGP has a PDF or a PowerPoint slide that they can put up for us, where I'm just going to do an overview of the changes that we've done in our budget monitoring model.
So why don't we have Mr. Crosby come up,
Crosby first
come up so that you can answer his question. I'm sure you can.
And then
during your commentary.
Certainly. And then to the degree it might delve into some of the numbers, then Pam will also help with responses.
Good. Okay. Mr. Schwartz.
Crosby Schwartz. Good afternoon, President Pearson, members of the board, and staff. Looking at the green sheets for this mid-year budget, I'm happy to see we have columns now for the Prop 218 estimates. I think that's very important to kind of see where we really are relative to the revenues that we're getting. But this brings me to another point, and that is with regard to the sustainable water facility. There is no money in this budget for operating the sustainable water facility. The Prop 218 budget recommended $166,000 a year be set aside for this, and which is a fairly small amount of money compared to what it would actually cost to run. But if it was accrued every year, even when the facility was not operating, it would provide a reasonable source of money to operate the facility. So I would recommend, and of course, the $166,000 a year was assumed that the rates would be in effect for a full year. Since they went into effect on November 1st, the actual number should be around $110,000 for this budget. I think that should appear in the line item. This is on page 152, the off-hauling R. O'Brien. I think the Prop 218 estimate in there should be $110,000. It's being collected and apparently being spent elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ogren.
Certainly. And so in direct response to the question itself, we need to remember that when the budget was originally adopted, it did not include the revenue estimates for Prop 218, so we're going to see some natural variances there. At this point in time, there's no budgetary recommendations. The second quarter or the mid-year budget numbers were previously reviewed with your board. We had some direction at that point in time with respect to the wastewater fund and a partial repayment of the loan, depending on, we just didn't want to run the wastewater fund into a deficit balance, and Pam might be able to speak to that detail a little bit more. But we held off on any overall recommendations in the second quarter because we wanted to work the new budget format and then work with the Finance Committee for the third quarter review and then come up with any recommendations that would be appropriate at that point in time. And that meeting is going to be with the Finance Committee next week. So we will be back on your board's agenda in May for any other mid-year budget adjustments that are necessary. We do know that there's one thing that we've identified, and this goes with the overarching theme of improving quality control, and that is that the budget adjustments that have already been quote-unquote approved this year were really implied, So the past practice of the district was an item would go to the board that gets approved by the board, and the budget adjustment was implied. So we're going to be coming back in May to actually formalize those actions that were implied earlier. The point here being is that the way that we want to move forward on, there's a recommendation to the board, and maybe it's to buy a piece of capital equipment and to finance it. If it's not in the budget, then we need to be expressive as recommendation number two then is to approve the appropriate budget adjustment. And so the past practice is that the budget adjustments were implied, and we want to make sure that they're expressed and very clear. So in the third quarter, we do want to come back and essentially ratify those actions, ratify the budgetary implications of the budgets that of the actions that your board has already taken. We've had a couple of, again, capital equipment purchases that have been approved with financing. There was some budgetary impacts associated with the prior general manager's severance package. So, again, these items were in front of your board and previously approved, but no formal budget adjustment was approved, and we'll be doing that. In addition, if we find some other particular items, there will be, and Pam and I and Monique are doing that evaluation right now in preparation for the Finance Committee meetings next week. But with respect to the comment that the money's been collected from SWF and then spent elsewhere, no, I don't think that would be a reasonable conclusion to draw. We just simply didn't have the revenues budgeted. The idea, though, that we do know that the three components of the water fund, the basic water fund, SWF operations, and SWF capital, they each have surpluses and deficits to the different degrees. So, you know, the revenue structure does get a little bit complicated, and one of our goals is to be able to identify, to evaluate both at the fund level detail, the water fund, SWF, and SWF capital, as well as on a combined basis. And that's part of the work that we're doing right now with Finance Committee. So we recognize that there are still some additional details and recommendations that we need to come back to your board after the third quarter review with the Finance Committee so that we can wrap up mid-year budget adjustments. The purpose of today's overview is really bringing forward to your board the work that we've done with the Finance Committee. And that's essentially the new budget format, budget monitoring format. And what we found in is that the district's adopted budget and then the district's mid-year budget and then the Prop 218 were all created under different types of formats. And so being able to do a comparative analysis of what was approved in the original budget, where are we at mid-year, and how does that compare to our Prop 218 estimates? Well, when they're all underneath different formats, it gets a little bit difficult. So what we've created is a singular format. And I noticed that on the screen, the slide is rolling from one sheet to another, and I'm hoping we can just freeze it at the very top. It's not easy to look at the screen and see the details, so I'm not going to attempt to, you know, especially go over the numbers or anything, but mostly focus in on column headings and what we're doing here. And let's see. Okay. Well, you know, that's even fine as it is. If there's any chance you can shrink the pane on the right side where it's got that little right, yeah, that arrow on. Yeah, that'll make it a little bit. So by focusing on the column headings, then, you know, normal of what we see are account numbers and account descriptions in the first couple columns. And, you know, account numbers relate to the accounting system. And, of course, the descriptions are what's more meaningful for everybody. But with respect to the actual budget, then, our first column is that which has been adopted. So that's always, we always want to keep that as the original adopted budget for the beginning of the year. As a reminder, the preliminary budget is adopted prior to June 30th, and the final budget is adopted prior to the end of August. The difference between the preliminary budget and the final budget is pretty much you close out a fiscal year, and the final budget you're figuring out what your final reserve numbers are from the prior year. But the revenue and expense plans typically don't change from the preliminary budget to the final budget. So we have an adopted budget, and then we want to make sure that we now track all of the approved adjustments that might happen any time during the year, really. If there's a significant action item that your board takes that warrants a budget adjustment on a specific date, it's going to be shown in there. If it's budget adjustments that result from mid-year budget review, it's going to show there. But with the approved adjustments column, then we'll track specifically what's changed during the year, and then separately we'll have a chronology of budget adjustments so that when we're doing mid-year review, there's going to be a table, and it might say on September 13th your board adopted certain actions that resulted in a budget adjustment. And so, again, this is how we're moving forward with these sheets, because this is a new model, and it's really going to be most effective for next fiscal year, and part of our work right now is really prepping us for next fiscal year's budget and how we're going to be tracking it. So we have budget adjustments, and then the current budget is going to be the adopted budget plus whatever budget adjustments we have. Depending on where we're at, second quarter, this is where we're at right now, 12/31. We show our actuals. If there's a percentage to look at, then it shows up there. And then the estimate for the end of the year. And we did get some correspondence from Ms. Bettenhausen with some of these questions, so I want to make sure to address them as well. One of the questions is, if this is 50% at actual, do we just double it to get to our estimated actual? And it all depends on the particular line item. We have some expenditures that get front-loaded. For example, CCSD has to pay a fee to LAFCO every year as a component of a LAFCO budget. But that's a one-time payment, usually happens at the beginning of the year. So whatever that actual is at 12/31 is going to be our estimate for the end of the year. There's a lot of expenses that we will estimate, you know, based on straight line. If we're 50% through the year, then we think they're going to be double as of the end of the year. But in any case, the estimated actual might work based on a percentage basis, or it might be identifying the specific line item and doing some special estimates on that line item. But this column then says, okay, well, where are we going to stand compared to the original budget? Are we going to be over the budget, or are we going to be under budget? And, of course, on revenues, we always hope to be over budget, and on expenditures, we always hope to be under budget. One of the things that's important on the variance analysis, anytime we see a positive number, it's good. Every time we see a negative number, it's bad. So whether it's a revenue variance or an expenditure variance, the math is opposite, you know, for revenues versus expenditures. But keeping it simple, positive numbers are good, negative numbers are bad. And so then we have our variance estimate. Now, what previously happened in the old formatting for the district was that whatever our estimated actual was became the new budget. The past practice has been adjust the budget to actual. And reviewing that with Director Seidel this morning, the new budget policies that were adopted in December are part of the reason we're taking the new format, because we don't do that anymore. We're stopping that past practice. We want to keep the adopted budget as the adopted budget only, and not make, let me clarify a little bit. In past practice, every single line item of the budget might change at mid-year. And the challenge or the problem with that is that we, at the end of the year, we've lost track of what the original adopted budget is. So the new process moving forward is we're only going to do the budget adjustments where necessary, and I think the budget policy speaks to significance. So we should expect that at the end of the year, we're going to have positive and negatives on a variety of line items, but at the total for a fund, whether it's wastewater or fire, we have to stay within total expenditures. If we're not going to be able to stay within total expenditures, then at the mid-year budget review, we have to identify, hey, we're, you know, what's happening, what are the reasons, and why do we need a budget adjustment so that we're not over budget at the end of the year. But by maintaining the individual line items from the original adopted budget and whatever adjustments, then over time we are able to better look at how well are we doing on our budget estimates. Because if we're consistently over or under on particular line items, then that tells us we, you know, maybe we're not doing a good job of estimating.
And really, when we're looking at budget actuals for estimate, it's the two different things that we have to evaluate. Are we just not doing a good job at budgeting, or are we not doing a good job of living within our budgets? But again, based on the new budget policy adopted in December, tracking how we're doing against the original budgets is enhanced in this approach. The final two columns then, okay, so this last column says, how are you doing against our budget? The final two columns only apply to the enterprise funds. They don't apply to the general funds because the enterprise funds, water, wastewater, SWF, SWF capital, those are the funds that the Prop 218 rate increases apply to. And what we see in these columns is that they don't have the same level of detail that the actual budgets do. So we can't really do line item by line item comparisons. But the goal here is to say, how are we doing on total salaries or total services and supplies as compared to what the Prop 218 estimates had projected at the time that the rate increases were approved. It's, you know, kind of a simple theory and everything, but the details that we're going to continue to work on, and it's especially important on the Prop 218 estimates versus actual, because the Prop 218s and capital projects are multi-year endeavors, right? We have to capital projects, unlike operations, take multiple years to implement, or a program can take multiple years to implement. And so we have to be able to track the revenues adopted in the Prop 218 and determine how much of that money needs to be put into reserves at the end of the year, specifically targeted or designated or earmarked for capital project expenditures, so that we don't lose track of it, and so that money that was collected for one purpose, you know, doesn't slide over to another purpose. And it's in this gray area there, because all the line items are revenues and expenses, and it's, again, I won't try to point to the details, but it's in this gray area here, then we're tracking what is it that we're either taking out of reserves or what are we putting into reserves. What's our operating surplus? What's our operating deficit, if there is one? What's the non-operating surplus or deficit? And how does our work on capital projects in the Prop 218 compare to estimates, and how much money should be putting into reserves? And that's applicable for on capital projects. It's also applicable on the SWF facility, where the comment was, if we've been collecting money, even though this facility is not operating this year, we need to make sure that that gets set aside so that we have it when the facility is operating. So that's sort of the big picture overview. We've been working this revised format. Want to make sure to really express appreciation for the ad hoc subcommittee of finance, as well as Mr. Siegler, who separately provided some feedback and input. Now, we call it version 1.0 right now because we know that with the development of Tyler, we're going to be making some modifications to it, as well as some additional feedback that we've been getting to the Finance Committee. But we're optimistic that the new formatting is really going to help with the accountability for the district's finances and really support the board's goals associated with being able to track the Prop 218 revenues and making sure that the money is spent for the intended purpose.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the budget next year will also have the columns for the 218 as they were estimated for the year 1920.
Yes. Yes. The budget format is going to look the same as this. We'll end up hiding some columns and exposing some other columns, but it's going to include both the budget estimates as well as it's going to have the Prop 218 line item for, you know, what was included in the Bartle-Wells report when Prop 218 was adopted.
All right, so that the community will be able to see exactly where the monies are being spent on capital projects, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, any questions or comments? Yes.
It isn't so much a question as a comment, and this this detail hadn't occurred to me earlier when we were having our conversations. the where the reserves are recorded in terms of beginning or in process. It might be worthwhile to have some detail to determine the years historically. It doesn't have to be on this form format, but, you know, potentially either as a mechanism of the system, new system being able to do it, or even as a, you know, a backup spreadsheet to show the incremental years reserves that went into the number itself, just so that we've got some form of reference when you're looking at a reserve number in total.
Yes.
Understanding the generation of it would be helpful.
Okay, and I agree. So this particular, what we're looking at in the board package right now, mm-hmm. It's the fund level details. And as you might imagine, behind that, we can start building additional details as well, depending on, you know, priorities. And so certainly a detail associated with a reserve, and any dollar amount of reserves can be broken into a number of designations, and we can do that. And then the additional comment that I'm hearing, Director Steidel, is being able to track it over a multi-year basis so that we can see, you know, how did that reserve increase in 1 year, because we didn't spend it all on the capital project. Maybe we were in a design phase and we weren't in construction yet.
Right.
And then we move into construction and the reserve is brought down in order to help fund construction.
Right.
But that way we can see the multi-year history.
You can get to your answers quickly if the question
comes
up. Yeah,
and how the money goes in and out. And,
right. Thank you.
Okay. Vice President Farmer.
I just wanted to comment that members of the community probably remember, and I just want to make this observation that in recent years, let's see, last 5-6 years or so, that expenditures have outpaced revenue, and it's obviously caused serious financial problems for the district and for the ratepayers of the community, and that recently a budget was balanced because no capital improvements none of the capital improvements for wastewater were approved for, and hopefully we won't be going in that direction again. I also want to make the comment with regard to capital improvements for wastewater that it was just a couple of days ago that John Alchin from Wastewater made the presentation regarding how things are moving forward with regard to the PG&E Turnkey Solutions Project. And until we have something further, you know, that is substantial, we can wrap our hands around as to how that moves forward. We'll be doing very few capital improvements at wastewater until we find out what PG&E will be, you know, providing for us.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone else? Questions on any of the other stuff? I have one question. Under the water fund comments that you've put on here, and I don't know whether this is Mr. Ogren's or Ms. Duffield's, but the water department operations talks about a new vehicle replacement program reserve. And I'm not sure that we actually have such a thing, and I'm not sure that we really want such a thing, so...
That was an item that was included in the Prop 218 study, is my understanding. And if you look at the last page where the reserves show up, we did earmark that amount of money for reserves for vehicle replacement program.
Okay. Director Steidel, where are we on the reserve policy revisions?
We'll have a much better idea on the 23rd.
When you meet
next
again?
Next, when we meet next.
Okay. Okay, good. Good. It's being worked on, is what you're saying. Okay. Terrific. Thank you. I think we're going to do away with that, by the way. No. That particular reserve, I don't think is going to exist anymore, but...
Additionally, there was a water meter replacement reserve that was also part of the Prop 218 study.
Okay. Good. Thank you. The other comment is that it's kind of difficult to follow through on all of this and the budget and everything without a balance sheet, because the balance sheet would tell us how much reserves we still have on the SWF capital fund, which I didn't see anywhere. Maybe I missed it. But can you give me an update on where we are on coming up with a balance sheet at some point?
Can speak to the challenge, because certainly one of the things that we've identified, and I included in the report that was part of last week's meeting, was that the current year budget was adopted without any reserves in it at all. So we've done some rough estimating, but really what we need to do is finish up the 17-18 audit. That way we'll have good solid numbers to work with. And even in this upcoming budget, we're going to do our best estimates as we can. But until the 17-18 audit is done, the ability to really nail down where our balance sheet is going to be a little bit compromised. So we're going to be bringing the budget to Finance Committee in May and to your board in June, and we'll provide the best estimates at that time.
Okay. And you were talking about 17-18. Are we talking about 18-19?
No,
17-18. I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah.
I'm with you. And we got an update on that, and that sometime in May you're going to be meeting with him again. Is that still the
That's
idea?
That's correct. He's not committed to a date yet, but early May is my request to get him in here as soon as we can in the beginning of May.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Anyone else? Comments, questions on this particular item? Is there anything that we need to do on this one? Is there a resolution we need to pass?
No action is necessary.
No action necessary. Thank you. All right, we'll move on to item 13C, which is the discussion and consideration of bike share location agreement with Zagster. I also have a public comment on that one also, so if you want to introduce it, Mr. Carmel, and then we'll have her speak. Thank you.
President Pearson, members of the board, the chamber received a $17,000 grant from the county to implement the bike sharing program. It partnered up with a company called Zagster to implement that program. They've recommended three bike station locations in Cambria. One of them, the proposed location, is at our skate park across the street. So you have in your packet a location agreement. The location agreement is for a year. It has annually self-renewing one-year terms. The agreement can be terminated on 30 days' notice. It has robust indemnification and insurance provisions that we've included. I will note that their Exhibit A, the insurance requirements, are not in your packet because we're waiting to hear back from SDRMA as to the amounts of those. There's no fiscal impact on the district, so we're essentially looking to the board to approve the agreement, authorize the general manager to execute it, subject to minor modifications deemed acceptable to the general manager and district council in case we run into any niches. And to also authorize the general manager to approve a similar agreement if this location ends up being inconvenient or the use is incompatible with the skate park. And then lastly, we'd also ask that you authorize the general manager to terminate the agreement if circumstances arise that militate in favor of termination. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
All right. Let's hear from Gail Jenkins first, please. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm really here just to answer any questions you guys may have. We actually originally had four racks, and we had one rack over in front of the Pacific Premier Bank, but their corporate decided against having a rack there. So actually what we would like to do is, if possible, add as a possible location using the same agreement at the Pocket Park as well for a fourth rack, because we have the money to do that. We literally have money and no place to put a rack. So we would like to introduce that if we could as a possible location, again, using the same agreement and then moving to the PROS committee to approve that. Do you have any questions on the?
Not right now. Okay. Carlos, I see you're in the back. Could you come up and give us? Are you okay with the Pocket Park being another place for the for a bike rack from Zagster? Since you're gonna,
we'd have to go and measure it. They have different size racks: 6 bike rack, 8 bike rack, 10 bike rack. It just depends on size. You have 14 feet, 18 feet, 22 feet. So it just would depend.
Okay, Carlos. Thank you, Ms. Jenkins.
Thank you, Board, for the opportunity to be here. So we had discussed the Pocket Park as one of the locations. I don't have a problem with the Pocket Park. There is good space for it. We'd have to find a space that's out of the way for people using the park for picnicking or whatever they want to use, but there's no problem with that. The discussion was also had about the skate park at the PROS Commission meeting last month, and they recommended the skate park as one of the locations right outside of the skate park. So that was their recommendation, and that's the reason why we have the skate park as a location.
Okay, very good. Thank you. All right, so
I'd just like to ask Carlos with regard to the location at the skate park. Because a lot of that area over there is dirt. Would this bike rack be on a paved area or in a dirt area?
So this bike rack is not going to be installed inside the skate park. It's going to be outside on the dirt area. The location that we've chosen is right next to the sign that says Cambria Skate Park next to the porta potty that's there.
I don't know if I, if the question was answered. Is it going to be in a dirt area or on a paved area?
It's going to be in the dirt area.
I don't know why. I mean, I'm a guy that loves walking barefoot in the dirt, but I'm not so sure that having the bike rack in dirt as opposed to somewhere where it's paved, and I'm not a lover of pavement, but that would seem to be more practical. Maybe I'm wrong. Less possibility of maybe something happening. I don't know. I'm just thinking of people not having good footing in dirt as opposed to being on pavement. That's all I'm thinking about.
Ms. Jenkins, comment?
Yeah, Zagster just says that we don't have to put it on pavement unless you feel inclined to want to pave a spot, but it can be on a pavement, dirt, or gravel. It just can't be on grass. So, like, for example, the Bluebird Inn station, that's kind of right at the end of Bluebird's property by the bike share or by the bike kitchen road, we are going to have to gravel that in. I'm going to have to gravel that in. But no, it can be on dirt. It's not a problem. They say they haven't had any issues with that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Director Steidel.
I just wanted to confirm there are a couple of other locations that were listed, one in both of the motels, one at East Village, one at West Village. As they're not mentioned in this, I'm assuming that this company would be contracting with them independently from what this represents. Okay.
So, property,
okay, so the only reason it's coming to us is because of the property held by CCSD. Okay. Yeah, I understand some of Director Farmer's concerns, not so much for the dirt, frankly, but if the weather is inclement, I can see bikes trailing lots of mud out from those areas and that kind of thing, potentially, not because people would necessarily be riding in the rain, but because the area would be wet. So that would be the only item. I don't know that there's any additional issue with the fact that there would be more bikes potentially crossing over or riding crossing Highway 1, because that kind of thing happens already, so it's 6-1. Are there areas that we as community need to be concerned about putting signage up to let people know that they are areas that they're not supposed to be taking those bikes? Oh, I was thinking more of some of the, the ranch areas or other places that people may feel that would be a great place to take a bike out, and especially since it's kind of a wider tired.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, the bikes are for the community. It's not just for tourists.
Understood. Right. Right. There's something else I wanted to ask, and I'm just trying to think of. Okay. So I know that the proposal covers the monitoring and moving to other locations. Have you gotten any feedback from Zagster as an organization about how good they are with those kinds of things, as there are bike programs sometimes that fall very short of following through on the things that they are accepting as their responsibilities? Thank you.
Would she please use the microphone? This is recorded, and many people watch this at home on the television. We will not hear what the dialogue is if we don't get it recorded.
Thank you.
The questions are over. So.
Any other questions?
Yes, Director Al.
A couple. You speak of possibly using the pocket park. It's been a little while. I don't remember anything there but grass. Would it have to be graveled, or
would have to etch out a piece of 14 to 22 feet, depending on what size rack, and we'll have to enclose that and gravel that.
So has this matter been brought before the PROS Commission?
Well, we talked to the PROS Commission back for the skate park back in November, which they approved, and they're aware that. Their rack is fine in the dirt. It's the other location, the Bluebird, that has to be graveled in. And we can put that towards them, too, for the PROS Commission for the pocket park.
Yeah, I was kind of concerned because if we're eliminating some grass, I think the PROS Commission should be consulted on that. Mm-hmm. The other question, which I think is really more for Mr. Carmel, I actually have another one for you, too. But
okay.
In the contract, which is with Zagster, our contract is not with the Chamber of Commerce, it's with Zagster.
The lease agreement for the property
is with
Zagster.
What we're being asked to do, it's a contract with Zagster.
Correct, the lease agreement because of the land being private property.
Got it, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it mentions good and valuable consideration, and I'm wondering what the consideration is on this case?
It's the bargain for exchange of property.
It's exchange for exchange? Okay. The other issue, has the Chamber considered traffic implications? Now, I know that we want to encourage people to use bicycles in town, and that's a good thing. But I also am, as I was driving down the street, thinking about cars backing out into the street and issues, and other issues, particularly for folks that may be out from out of town who may be choosing to use the sidewalks for the bicycles. And I do envision some issues there. Is the chamber willing to take the responsibility for enforcing the rules of the road for the bicycles?
Well, I would have to talk to the chamber about that.
I think that probably.
I mean, the idea is the bikes are to stay on the road or a bike path. They're not supposed to be on the sidewalks.
Correct, yeah, we all know that, but I can envision cases where, especially in the West Village, where there's so much head-in parking, I could see problems there, especially if you have lots of bike traffic and people therefore electing to use the sidewalks instead. So it's just an area that has me a little concerned, but it's out of our frame of what we can do other than to approve
a lease
such as this.
It's like driving the speed limit, right?
I mean. Yeah, kind of like that. Okay.
Well, who does that? Just kidding. If I could ask, I'd like to ask about the location there at the Pocket Park. And also, with regard to maybe putting up a sign at each one of these locations reminding people to, you know, ride on the road and not on the sidewalk.
It would probably be on each station has a bike station sign.
Right.
And then also when you go on the app, there'll be legally binding, you know, you say yes to the app and you agree to the agreements of what you are asked for, which we can probably put into the agreements when they sign up to rent a bike out.
One more thing with regard to putting a location at the Pocket Park. There's already those side horses there because of the problem with the sidewalk. So I think maybe that needs to be repaired before we consider. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah, the pavement right in front there. Is that
right,
what
where
about?
It's painted orange, where that lip is up, and mm-hmm. people have actually fallen there. So I would think that perhaps that area needs to be improved or put back to where it's normal, as opposed to, like I said, problem walking there and the side horse and this area with the tape. I'd feel more comfortable if that happened first.
And is that on an agenda to fix that, have that being fixed in the near future?
Yeah, I think staff can answer that. Ms. Madrid, you want to try that one?
Legal counsel and I were consulting for a quick second there, so if we could hear the question again.
How are we doing on repairing the sidewalk in front of the Pocket Park? I know we've got the money to do so, right? But have we?
I'll be talking with Carlos next week to take care of it. We have some direction from the interim general manager to follow up on.
Okay.
So as a reminder for me, because some of the local terms I'm not quite up to speed with, but the Pocket Park is
at the end of Bridge Street.
Yeah. So we've received a follow-up correspondence with the county because the question was whether or not their drainage facilities created the damage to the sidewalk. They've inspected it, they've provided us photos, and they've provided the assertion that the drainage facilities are fine and did not create the damage. And so Ms. Madrid is going to be working with Mr. Mendoza to look at the photos and confirm whether we concur. If we do agree with the county's conclusion, then we're going to get the quotes from the contractors to prepare the sidewalk. On this particular item, a couple of points of clarification. One is I would hope that legal counsel can provide clarification on an appropriate motion if your board does want to consider multiple locations. The agreement is currently drafted, drafted as a single location, so I think legal counsel can help with that. And the second question is my uncertainty as to the level of detail that has gone through PROS on the second location that we're talking about. Certainly Mr. Mendoza has looked at it and he's expressed concurrence with that second location. If your board is in support of that, one option that you might do in your motion is to have us go back to PROS and make sure that they're good with the location as well, depending on, again, I'm uncertain as to the level of review that they've done at that second location, and Mr. Mendoza may be able to help with that as well.
Okay. Yes, Director Al.
Two things to respond. I think we're better off to consider just this one location at this time because we have no knowledge that it's not going to work.
That's absolutely fine. And the second location, if you do decide and we can decide that that's a good location, we can do that after the fact.
That seems reasonable
to
me.
That's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. The other question I had is, and I think there's been some other concern addressed. I know that with the with the scooters that are being used in other places, yes. people are, it's a similar kind of business model, mm-hmm. but what's happening is that many times the scooters are just abandoned anywhere on the street wherever the last user happened to put it. And my last trip to Isla Vista, it was littered with scooters. So has the chamber made any arrangements?
So the premise of this concept is, let's say someone's over at the Castle Inn and they decide to check a bike out. They go on their app, they say, I want to go, haven't figured out price yet, let's say $5 for 2 hours. They get on their bike, they drive around town, they're, I'm hungry, let's go grab lunch at Robin's. They go and find on their app the nearest bike location where they can click the bike back in, and boom, they're done with their ride. And it is officially over. When they want to get back on the bike and go back to the hotel, they click out another bike from their closest location, and they go back to the hotel, click it back into the hotel rack, boom, done with their ride. So that's the whole point. If they leave it sitting out, they're going to keep getting charged. And when they enter into the contract, there's a credit card that's given and all of that. So they're not going to want to leave that laying around somewhere. But that's why eventually it would be nice to have multiple racks where it's easy access taking one out and putting one back in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Vice President Farmer?
I just wanted to comment that with all the litter that we know is around, now we have another one to add to it. Would you call it scooter litter? Anyway.
All right. Director Steidel.
I just wanted to voice a little bit of a concern regarding the Paca Park, and that just has to do with traffic. With it being in a point of one-way streets that people aren't familiar with, and with a very narrowed alley with both the access going into the post office as well as the other access going out beyond the restaurant there and the Bianchini House. I think that in looking at the Paca Park as a place to do that, probably that should be considered also or discussed.
That's a good point to make, too, and especially people realizing not just in bikes but in cars, too, that's one way. I've seen it multiple times. So that would be something very specific that would have to – more signs would have to be put up and stuff written on the bike station sign. But a good point for consideration for that location. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good discussion. Can I get a motion to go ahead and approve the skate park lease as it is written and all the other stuff that Mr. Carmel said about allowing the interim general manager to cancel as necessary? And
Why don't I go ahead and phrase the motion? And
phrase
you can
the motion.
So,
and then
so
we
moved.
Can, yes.
Motion be to approve and authorize the general manager to execute the agreement with Zagster, subject to minor modifications approved by the general manager and district council. Authorize the general manager to execute a similar agreement at a different site if necessary. And three was to authorize the general manager to terminate the agreement if appropriate.
All right. Anyone want to so move?
I'll move that.
Second?
I have a problem with it, the wording.
Okay.
Before. Could we delete the part about the, because I really think if it's an alternate location, we need to come back. I don't think that it can go forward without coming back to here. I would be more comfortable with not okaying the alternate location at this time. Is that possible?
The alternate location would be the Veterans Memorial Building.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
So why don't we'll include that in the motion so that it's clear cut.
Yeah, sorry.
So we'll add the alternative location would be the Veterans Memorial Building.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now I second the motion.
Okay. Very good. Very good. We have a motion seconded. We have a roll call vote, please.
Vice President Farmer?
Yes.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Steidel?
Aye.
President Pearson?
Aye. Passes 4-0 with Director Rice not being here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your
very,
time. I
very helpful
it.
In helping us make
it'll be a great
decision.
Program. We're really excited.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I think also we need to make a direction for the PROS committee to consider the Paca Park. So we need to somehow get that to the PROS commission so that they are going to look into the Paca Park and all the different issues and that kind of thing, and you can once again go back to them and then bring another agreement to us, okay?
Sure, absolutely.
All right.
Very Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right, moving on to item number 13D. Mr. Ogren, you want to introduce this one?
Certainly, the subject of 13D is discussion and consideration to fill a vacant seat on the policy committee. Your board has a number of applications, and we'd be glad to assist in any discussion.
Very well. Any commentary or nominations to fill that position? Or since Director Rice is not here, she made known her preference to me, but at the same time, would that be a violation for me to tell them? And it's an open session now, so it shouldn't matter, right?
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah, Director Rice would like to have Mr. Nugent on the committee. Since he's already on the R&I committee, he'd have to resign that and move to the policy committee, and then next month we'd have to do a replacement for him.
Well, I'm wondering, may I? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we might be able to combine that, because we do have Mr. Key's two applications, one for policy and one for infrastructure. So could we, or because it's not agendized, we can't just do a switcheroo?
No, but and I would say that what we should do is, once again, as we did with the policy committee, ask for applications again, and in May we could look at those applications and pick someone. So that would have to be the basis we do that on. Unless we pick somebody besides Mr. Nugent. And if we pick somebody besides Mr. Nugent, then we don't have to worry about that. Director Steidel.
Of the candidates putting in their paperwork, I had not considered Paul because of his position on the R&I committee already. I had two folks. One is Ted Key, because the background that he had in his application shows exposure to process and linear applications and problem solving, and I thought all of those would be appropriate in policy decision or recommendations. And the other, of course, is would be Jim Barringer, because of his background and familiarity with the district and the need for the policy areas.
Okay. Director Howe.
Bearing that in mind, I think I would go ahead and nominate Ted Key for this position, and then we can, at another meeting, discuss the issue about whether we wish to exchange committee members. Because if we do it now, policy is running short one person already, and infrastructure can't afford to lose a person at this point either. So in the interest of moving forward, I suggest we go ahead and nominate. I mean, I'm quite happy Ted Key would be doing quite well on policy. It just happens, I think, his preference is probably infrastructure, but he'd be very good on policy. And may I suggest we go forward with that and see how that works, and then see what Amanda has to say if she wishes to.
Okay.
So, therefore, I nominate Ted Key.
All right. Discussion on the nomination of Vice President Farmer.
Considering the fact that of all the candidates that are on this list here, Mr. Key is the only one in the audience who's actually attending this particular issue. So perhaps we could, I don't know if this is out of line, perhaps we could just request him to step up to the microphone and let us know his feelings on this.
Sure, I don't have any problem with that. Mr. Key?
Good afternoon. I want to serve this community. I'm very heavily invested in this community and all the people who live here. I think I bring some skills to policy. I would agree that my stronger skills are probably in infrastructure. So, but whatever the CSD determines, I'm ready to serve in the capacity that you believe is best. So that's, you know. If you have any questions of me, I'd like to address them.
Okay, I don't. Anyone else? No? All right, we have a nomination. We want to have a vote here. We're going to vote, roll call vote.
Second.
Oh. Okay.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Seidel?
Aye.
Vice President Farmer?
Just to clarify, this is for?
Policy.
Policy. And the person that we're voting on is?
Mr. Key.
Yes.
President Pearson?
Aye. Passes 4-0. Mr. Key, congratulations. You're now a member of the Policy Committee. All right, moving along, we're on 13E, which is a discussion and review of update on goals. We had the meeting in January, early in January, where we had a town hall, discussed goals for the board, and at our last meeting, Ms. Madrid did a very good job of summarizing in her general manager's report where she is on the staff goals and organizational goals, so we thank her for that. The two goals that really were left assigned to the full board, okay, were one, public outreach, and two, advance the district's strategic planning efforts. So, public outreach, Director Howell, you'd like to talk on that one?
Yes, I would, and this gives me a chance to put a plug in as well. For public outreach, we've already had two tours of the sewer plant that were well attended, and we are having another one tomorrow, and an additional one next Thursday at 9 o'clock. Anyone interested should call the district office. We can take as many as 10 people in a tour. Some people have enjoyed it so much they've gone back more than once. So it's definitely something that I think people would find very interesting, and it's free. In addition to that, we have coming up, this is all public outreach, and so those. What I want to say about that is those tours have been very successful. So I think we are achieving what we're after, which is to engage people and give them some real sense as to what the concrete issues are on the one hand, and give them some voice in how these things are addressed. We've had good attendance at our subcommittee meetings, standing committee meetings. So I'm very pleased at how this process is proceeding. Apropos of that, we're having in the new water facility, sometimes known as the SWF, Jim Green is very eager to give tours, and he's agreed to meet people at 10:30 next Friday. You know, someone else will have to remind me of the date, but 10:30, not tomorrow, but next week, 10:30. I'm sorry. 26th. It's April 26th for the first of what we hope to have many tours of that facility. So invite people from the community and anybody who's watching, and of course anyone here, to please consider that tour as well. It will also involve tour of the impoundment basin as well. And again, call the district office and reserve a spot for that. So these efforts have gone very well, and our standing committee meetings, I think, are really serving the function that we hoped it would. So I'm very pleased about that.
Good. Mr. Key, you'll have to fill out a slip if you would.
Okay.
Any other comments?
I just want to comment. Mr. Director Howell just said that people have attended the tour of the sewer plant more than once. These are people that really care about our community. So to throw that in.
Director Steidel.
So I was just curious, are we going to formally be statusing the goals and objectives on a regular basis? Like maybe quarterly or something, that so it kind of helps keep us on
yes.
on track.
Yeah, I intend to get it on the agenda on a quarterly basis.
Okay,
absolutely.
If of course we have a very small number of the community here today, but I think also to solicit feedback. An active solicitation of feedback from the community when we do those reviews would
sure.
be worthwhile.
Sure. Our next review will be in July, and we can certainly put that out there that we would like to get some some feedback on how we are doing on our goals and that kind of thing. Anything else on public outreach? I do think we're doing a pretty good job, and we've gotten a lot of participation from the community on these committees. I mean, the fact that we had five more people apply for the opening on the policy committee is terrific, I think. So, all right. Nothing else on that one. The other one, yes.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
When you speak of the quarterly review, might it not be a good idea to do it in the format similar to what you did for the when we're working out the board goals with the community? If you recall, it was kind of a town meeting sort of format.
Town hall
format, so that we get some feedback, maybe. I don't know, but I liked that meeting, and I thought it was productive, but I don't know.
I mean, it's certainly a possibility in that it offers a chance for some real dialogue, where if people are just coming to the meeting, to the CCSD meeting, there, I don't know that there's as much opportunity for dialogue between the board and the community. July, although it's the beginning of the fiscal year, is mid-year in terms of calendar, and where we started with the initial GNOs with that January meeting. So that certainly would be a possible option.
Okay. I made a note of that so we can bring that up in June and see if that's what we want to do. Okay. All right. The other one was strategic focus. Advance the district strategic planning efforts. And as part of that, the initial thing was to get together a mission and vision statement. And in order to properly do that, I think we need input from the community and input from the staff, as well as the board. So once again, I'm thinking maybe we should have a town hall at some point and be able to have both the staff and the community give us input as to what they feel the mission and vision of the CCSD should be. So, sometime in May, should we have this?
We're already in April.
right. So yeah. It'd be the end of April or sometime
maybe.
In May.
Yeah.
We have two meetings in May. One is on the 8th and one is on the 23rd. So maybe we have it in between those two meetings, or...
I think the hesitation for me at least has to do with the numbers of meetings. I know we're going to be going right. through multiple meetings on the Finance Committee. We need a joint meeting between Finance and R&I relative to the CIP and turnkey. And then we've got budget. And we're bound to have some kind of ad hoc that I know the Finance probably will interact with the staff. We've got some major commitments.
You guys are going to have a joint meeting too, aren't you?
Yeah.
So maybe what we do as part of the mid-year review is we go ahead and have the town hall to do that and to do the mission statement in July.
Yeah, good idea.
By that time, the budget will be mostly over. Mr. Ogrich.
Yeah, I agree. May is definitely going to be a crunch period. For the preparation of next year's budget. And then July, we will have the budget done, which we can reflect on as well.
Yeah. So let's put off for now, but let's get on the agenda for next month, setting a date for a town hall in July, okay? And also having a agenda for that meeting, trying to set the agenda for that town hall meeting, okay? Sounds good?
Perfect.
All right, good. All right, last one.
I have a comment.
Regular business. Oh, I'm sorry, Vice President Farmer.
There's one particular item here that I just reflected upon under district-wide board goals on page 150, and I was looking at item 1.4, which is complete the regular permitting and other actions relating to the quote, sustainable water facility, unquote. So it says ongoing efforts associated with the, quote, SWF, unquote, continue to create a demand on district resources, and completing the effort, the efforts in a timely manner should be considered a high priority. You know, my feeling is that a high priority with regard to this facility, and I've written this down so I just don't try to ad lib, is that we should also be considering, you know, how much time and money, ratepayers' money, can the district continue to spend on this facility, and why? You know, what is the ultimate goal? And I mean, the district has been, you know, strapped for cash, and part of the reason is because of how much of the resources of this community we've had to spend. And that should be given a high priority as to how much is continuing to, like I said, be spent, and can we really afford to continue to do this? That's just my feeling, and I know a lot of people out there in the community feel the same way.
All right. Thank you. Director Howell, commentary? No? Okay. Good. All right. Moving on. We're on 13F. Mr. Ogren.
President Pearson, members of the board, and the public, I'm going to make a couple of quick introductory comments and then turn it over to Ms. Duffield. The essence of this agenda item is not for action. Ms. Duffield is going to review the approach to the calculations as they've been presented, and part of the direction that we're seeking from the board is whether or not there might be alternative approaches that you would want us to also calculate back out and come back next month in order to consider actions. And with that, Ms. Duffield.
Thank you. So a few months back, your board requested staff to do a little bit of analysis on some cost estimates for what we would offer if we did offer low-income water rates. So I put together some usage information based on how we currently apply the wastewater low-income reduction. And so the first table you'll see in discussion shows what our actual reductions have been to ratepayers thus far this fiscal year, which is around $15,600. And then applying that same logic, what it would look like if we applied that to water sales. Also, I included for you the PG&E CARE application, which shows the eligibility requirements that customers have to meet in order to be in that program. And then once they're enrolled in that program, they also are eligible to be enrolled in our program, how it stands now. So I included the PG&E CARE application and also our internal low-income application that's given to customers.
Okay, very good. Director Howell, you have something to let you know? Okay. Good. I did a little more math, and what I came up with that it's about $24,000 a year that it's going to cost us on the wastewater, and similar amount of money on the water. So we're talking about, we've already granted $24,000, and we're looking at granting another $24,000.
That's correct. If you look at the first paragraph in the fiscal impact, I did give you the annual estimate of $23,766, so you're right on the money.
How did I miss that?
Okay. I don't know, but I think it's pretty impressive that you were that close. Just a few dollars off.
So one of the things that we talked about before, and I think Vice President Farmer brought this up, is that we really shouldn't be giving these people a break if they're misusing water, okay? And so one of the things that we need to ask is, what's the difficulty in allowing the 40% to be applied only to their standard usage? In other words, if their allocation is 6 units, we would apply the 40% to that, but not to any usage above and beyond that. Is that going to be difficult to do or not?
It would be a billing nightmare.
It would be a billing nightmare.
Well, because right now we don't have allocations in place. So our current policy is that they're allowed a discount up to 12 units of water, and anything above that, they pay the regular standard rate that everybody else does. It's very easy to apply this to the wastewater rate structure because there are no tiers. But when you get into the tier structure of the water fund, it becomes a very difficult task for programming of the system, and then also for staff to constantly be monitoring that to ensure that our billing system is working appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
So if I might.
Okay. Sure.
And one of the things that I kind of encourage in these discussions, since you're not taking action today, is that if your board's preference is for us to look at providing discounts for the first 6 units as opposed to the first 12 units, and then we go back and we evaluate, you know, how difficult is that going to be, that would be part of our report back to your board. So I want to continue to encourage your board that if you have different scenarios, let us know what they are, and we'll report back to them. Because I don't know the intricacies of the billing model that obviously Ms. Duffield does. But, you know, I think there's a sort of a question there that if it's good for the first 12 units, why can't we just do it for the first 6 units? And, Pam, is that because our tiers are based on 12 units for water right now?
So I'm looking up the water rates right now. So our water rates are in tiers of 1 to 4 units at one rate. Oh, sorry, I'm looking at SWF. I'm on the wrong page. Sorry, it's still 1 to 4 on water, 4 to 16, and then greater than 16. So if we're trying to apply that in between those tiers, I mean, I would have to talk with our current financial system and get a better estimate maybe from them on how easy or difficult that would be and the cost associated with that.
Okay. Excuse me for my ignorance, but how does the current billing work? Is that part of the MOMS software? It is.
That's
oh,
correct.
My God. Oh, so it's going
it
to
is.
Switch over to the new system.
Yes, that's correct.
At some point.
So we have a different system that actually goes around town and reads the meters.
Yes.
And that is our meter reading system, Badger meters. And then that data is imported into the MOMS.
Imported
system.
Or manually
it's
put
downloaded
in.
Into
it's
MOMS.
Downloaded.
Yes.
Okay.
Electronically downloaded into MOMS, and then we process our utility billing from that point.
Okay. So in the future, whenever we get the new software done, we'll be importing that same data or similar data if we get new meters into the financial system, and then the financial system will handle the billing from there.
That would be my assumption, yes.
Okay. So do we let the Tyler Encode ad hoc committee look into this and see what possibilities there are and work with staff on coming up with a reasonable solution here?
Well, Director Howell and I certainly did need a project to put our teeth into, so I guess this is as good a one as any. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I think part of the issue with applying it to water is that we already have multiple billing codes in water. We have the SWF, we have the tiers for SWF, we have water regular rates, we have usage. I don't know that there's any more capability in the water billing portion of MOMS, but we can certainly look into it.
My feeling is that we don't want to do anything more with MOMS than we have to, because, I mean, it's already a broken system, and every time we need to do anything with it, we have to pay this guy to do a special, which takes him days at times, right? And so I would just as soon since this isn't a critical thing, that we work with Tyler Encode and see if we can get some semblance of this rate reduction for low-income people done while we're doing the implementation of Tyler Encode.
And certainly since I have worked with Tyler and currently am working with Tyler, I know that it's completely capable of doing so. The issue there is we just give them a different customer classification. We set up different rate schedules there. I think we still get back to the idea, though, that the Prop 218 approved rates have one tier at 0 through 4 units. And so it may be then when we come back to the board, the idea is, well, maybe there's a 40% discount on that tier 1 through 4. But since the next tier then goes 5 to 16 and it's a pretty big, you know, tier, maybe that one drops down to, you know, a 10% discount or a 20% discount. And then after tier 2, I think we have a tier 3, over 16 units, then no discount would apply at that. So as we're working through that conversion and working with Vice President Farmer and Director Howell, we can develop some scenarios like that as well. Because certainly it's consistent with, you know, the desire for water conservation while also having a desire to provide some low-income discounts.
Yeah, I think that's what we ought to do is just let you guys work with that and see if we can come up with a great plan to help out the low-income people like we want to.
Yeah, I concur with that. I have a question. I mean, and I do agree also that to expend a lot of effort to try to make this work with moms is probably not productive because we know we're going to change and it will happen within a year's time. So it would be better to put the effort forward and not have to redo it. I do agree with that. I have one question, though. Presently on my bill, I see the allocation that my household has, which is, I think, left over from when we were actually charging surcharges. So apparently the billing system knows what the allocation is for my, in this case, a residence of two people. Could someone remind me what the, is it four units per person per month or two units per person per month? It's two per person per month. So two people, 8 units in a billing period. So the system does know. I mean, and when we were into surcharges, the system did in fact know if we had gone over our allocation. So there is some logic in there somewhere. So I would suggest that if I'm thinking of this 12 units, I agree. I think that we don't wish to encourage overuse, and so certainly if I'm getting a 40% discount and perhaps I'm less careful than I would otherwise be, and I would be a little more likely to run over. Now, so I do agree. I think that it does need to be. I don't have a problem with the 12 units. It could be 8. It could be 12. But I suspect that it should really be, I would like to see it related to the number of people in the household that, as we're looking at these allocations. Because we do know that we have to keep track of that in the event that we do eventually have to impose surcharges due to another water emergency. We're going to need that information in the system anyway. So we might as well be thinking about it now, I guess. But that's all part of the same thing. So yeah, I look forward to working on that. I think it should be a good use of time.
My only concern is that for the amount of money that we're talking about, that seems like a lot of complexity. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, if it could make the difference between, you know, $1,000 or $2,000, which I'm just obviously throwing a number out there, I don't know that we want to get into such a finite tracking that we're spending more than we're more than the value of what it's doing for us.
Oh yes, of course, I would agree to that. I think what Director Farmer and I are going to need as we go forward and with the staff is what the board's intent is. Does the board wish to stay with the 12 unit thing, or do we wish to go more with the? Or do you want us to come back to you with some ideas?
I think you guys are capable of coming back with a plan.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
And I, you know, I think the both of you are wanting to do the right thing and work with the complexity and keeping it simple as we can, but at the same time serving the community properly. I think you guys will do a great job of doing that. So,
okay. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
tell us what you find working with the staff and stuff. Okay. So that'll take several months, so we won't expect this back on the agenda until probably August or September. Okay. All right. Next, I will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Mr. President, just briefly for the benefit of the public, I wanted to clarify that this item is simply a clarification that Mr. Ogren will be receiving his dental insurance premium and medical insurance premium as cash in lieu, and that'll be shown in his contract and the salary schedule.
Yeah, so this is just
it's a cleanup.
Cleanup, repair of what we did last month.
So. Thank you.
Okay. All right. A motion to approve the consent agenda.
So move. Oh, sorry.
Second.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second.
Director Howe.
Aye.
Director Seidel.
Aye.
Vice President Farmer.
I'll approve it, but I don't even see it on here. I mean, it goes from 13 to 14, which is future agenda items.
This is the new one.
Oh, the new
one. There was an amended agenda.
Okay, new, improved, updated, and I'm not improved and updated. So.
Okay.
No improvements possible, Vice President Farmer.
All right.
President Pearson.
Yes, aye. Okay. I'm sorry.
President Pearson, if I might, as you've concluded that item, I did get some correspondence from a member of the public who asked why we don't take public comment on all items. And I'm just mentioning it now because, as a point of clarification, you had no public comment slips on this particular item.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, we take public comment on almost anything. All right. Future agenda items, going back a little bit, I think Director Farmer has some good news on the budget that he'd like to give us.
So last week, after our regular meeting, is the meeting of FFRP. And there was a lot of discussion with regard to how things are on the ranch, with regard to the homeless issue, the removing of debris, and so forth. And after much debate, and I'm sorry that Carlos isn't here, he might be able to give us an even more efficient accounting of what took place. But like I said, after a discussion of the 12 members of the board, they came to the conclusion that, well, first off, Carlos, let's say, I guess it was 2 months ago, he said that the cost of clearing out the homeless encampments, some of them that were recent, some that have gone back, you know, 1 or 2 years or more, that it would cost $20,000, maybe $40,000. But it turns out that the cost for utilizing, I don't recall which West Coast Tree Service, I believe it was, I could be wrong in the name, it turned out the amount was only $10,000. So as I said, after board discussion, they decided to take $5,000, they, FFRP, decided to take $5,000 out of their endowment fund to help pay for the cost of, you know, clearing out the homeless encampments as some kind of good faith measure. So the district, the $10,000, they're matching funds, so the district will put in five and they'll put in five. And so there you are. Which was kind of unexpected, but once again, it's an issue, and it is out there on the ranch, and it is FFRP, so they just wanted to chip in.
And we are very grateful. Thank you.
Yeah.
The whole community is. Okay. Future agenda items. Vice President Farmer, you have anything you want to make sure we get on?
I don't know if this is necessarily a future agenda item, but I'm just going to bring this up. And it's probably commented on this before. I really feel that this district, we're a very special community. I think anybody that lives here or anybody that works here knows that. And one of the things that the state has brought up with regard to funding available is regarding water efficiency. And this district really needs to take a more aggressive approach to how we more efficiently use the water that's available to us, as well as being more in harmony with the natural environment, which obviously most of the planet isn't doing. So whether it's utilizing and hopefully expanding the wetlands that we have, investigating off-stream storage to meet the future needs of our community, I think this needs to be done. And the more we do along these areas, and also gray water systems, obviously probably a little bit late in the game because we're approaching summertime, but gray water systems, you know, are more efficient collecting of winter runoff for cisterns and water tanks. You know, we used to give rebates back in the early 90s to people that did that. You know, more people are doing that with regard to, you know, water tanks and cisterns to collect and winter runoff. But I feel like this is something the district really needs to pursue, because the more we do that and see that we're making more efficient use of the water that's available, the greater opportunity we have to get grant funding from various local as well as state agencies. So that's something, I don't know how we put that on the next agenda item, but I just want to say that's something this district, I really feel, needs to have on their radar screen as we move forward. Thank you.
Okay. I will say that when we were doing our goals, that one of the things that we did was we talked about the infrastructure committee becoming the resource and infrastructure committee, and that this was this topic that Vice President Farmer brought up was to be part of their charge. Okay, so Director Howell, that's something, I know you're busy with other things right now, but that's something that, yes, definitely needs to be on there. The other thing is, it seems to me that in the general manager's report of last month, or maybe it was this month, you had something in there about washing machines and having a rebate program for upgrading washing machines and dishwashers, or somebody was?
We have money in the budget for conservation rebates, and I know Melissa's looking into it. And if that's what it said in the report, that's probably what she's looking into.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe you could contact Melissa and see if she could make a presentation at your committee meeting sometime soon. Okay. Any other? Okay. Sorry, Mr. McKinnon. I think we're past that. I don't know that we can go back on the agenda. Are we permitted to let him speak on 14A at this point?
Well, we're past it. I mean, you have discretion if you want to.
I do have discretion?
Sure.
Is it open to a comment at the end of the meeting before you adjourn?
Yeah, I'll allow it. Let's do it then. Let's finish up with the future agenda. Mr. Ogren, I believe you had something for the future agenda.
Correct, President Pearson, and not certain as to whether this will be a future agenda item, but it's certainly noteworthy and possible. Wanted to report that on March 6, 2019, that the district did receive a notice of violation from the Division of Drinking Water for water quality information that was provided in apparently the December report. I believe it discusses the January report, but I think it was actually the December report.
Well, we're not sure exactly which report, because the one says the December and one says January, but we've determined that there wasn't an.
So, in response to this, then staff corresponded relatively significantly with the Division of Drinking Water, and had the impression that the notice of violation was going to be rescinded. The basis for the notice of violation appears to be incorrect data that was submitted to the Division of Drinking Water. Staff has gone through and evaluated the sources of data, made corrections and submitted the new information and the new data, and did so relatively quickly after the notice of violation had been issued. We did not formally appeal the notice of violation because we were under the impression that it was going to get rescinded. It was not formally rescinded, however, and so right now we're in correspondence with the Division of Drinking Water as to what the next steps are. But again, wanted to bring it to your board's attention and to the public's attention that the notice of violation is out there. We have been doing quality control review of the data. We have been working with staff of the Division of Drinking Water, and we'll provide updates to your board as this issue continues.
And for clarity purposes, I assume that the drinking water that we have been providing the community was not at all outside of bounds?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you. So we'll put that on the agenda for next month to go ahead and have an update on that particular issue.
President Pearson, would it be okay to include it with, if we don't have any actionable items, is it okay to include that update in the general manager's report?
As long as it's verbalized, yes.
Okay.
Any other future agenda items? Okay, Mr. McKinnon.
Yeah, Jerry McKinnon, just a cranky old man. Thank you for the coffee. That helped a bit. But when we got down to 14A, consideration of approval of an amendment, it's kind of like from the public's point of view, mine, we're dealing with a sealed envelope. I have no idea what that envelope contained. You didn't openly say what the amendment is. There was no discussion on it. And from my particular point of view, you guys voted on something that the general public has no idea what it is. Now, had I heard it, I could possibly have put in a request to speak because there was something in the amendment that got my attention. But you really got my attention when you vote on a sealed envelope. Now, I suggested to the policymaker that they put something in the policy that whenever you're going to vote on something, that there be some kind of an open discussion for the sake of the public. That's all my end. Thank you again for the coffee.
Okay. Thank you, sir. There, just for clarity, this particular item that we had on the consent agenda was just a repair of an item that we had and voted on and had a lot of discussion on in March. Correct?
No. It was last meeting.
It was last meeting. Okay. It was a week ago.
Right. And I did want to point out.
Flies when you're having fun.
I did want to point out that I explained exactly what the item was before you considered the item. Perhaps Mr. McKinnon was having coffee at that point in time.
Yeah. Okay. But thank you for your comment.
Jerry, just out of curiosity, since you're the only one that comments on the coffee, is there anything additional you'd like us to add to it to make your day go a little better?
Well, as Mike the waitress said, coffee is for me. Thank you.
Sorry, can't help you there, babe.
All right. Anyone else? Adjourned to closed session. Thank you.
We're going to consider agenda items 16A through D.